Wow. How about I just sit down and you play some more? Takes my breath away. How beautiful. Well, it's a joy to be with you all today. Thank you so much for the kindness of having me. What an honor to be here. I bring you greetings from all our community at Tiggs Pond in the kingdom of Zirconia. Without a stoplight, we have to do something to distinguish ourselves. So we decided to call ourselves the Kingdom of Zirconia. And I'm thrilled to be there. I moved back to this area after a sojourn of about 20 years. I grew up in South Carolina, in Gaffney, of all places, home of the Peachoid, and home of, what's the guy's, the character in that House of Cards show? Yeah. They needed a crooked politician. They could search the whole world over, and they come to my hometown to find him. Well, it's pretty apropos, I have to tell you. I moved away and was in New York City for 15 years and then moved to California for 3 and back here about a year ago. I'm a forgiveness teacher. I came kicking and screaming to the work of forgiveness because I had it all figured out. I had some brilliant sermons on forgiveness. Just ask me. I could expound upon forgiveness as long as the day is and all these truths about forgiveness, but I didn't have a clue until I had to do the hard work of forgiveness. I came kicking and screaming to the work of forgiveness by way of a little incident called 9/11. When 9/11, excuse me, when 9/11 happened, I was serving a church in Lower Manhattan called St. Paul's Chapel, the little church that stood, which is the phrase that we took from a children's a letter from a little girl to become the title of the book I'm working on. She said, "You're kind of like the little train that could. You're the little church that stood." And when 9/11 happened, we had no idea what we were in for. Before 9/11, I was called there to create a laboratory for alternative, emergent sorts of worship. And so, being the closet mad scientist and liturgical technician that I fancied myself to be, I was in heaven. We were doing jazz masses, even did a setting of the mass in hip-hop and techno, and oh, we were so far out there. We took as our motto that if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space. And that's one of the reasons, as you came in, you saw a poster for that beautiful film, Man on a Wire. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But 9/11 happened, and we didn't realize how far out on the edge we were and would become. I was in my office when the first plane hit the North Tower and assumed it was an accident. I was on the street corner beneath the South Tower when the second plane hit it. I had to run for my life, dodging debris that was falling. And in that moment, a calm, a bit of serenity and quiet surrounded me like a psychological, emotional, spiritual force field. I discovered in that moment, when the whole world was falling apart, that I'm not afraid to die. I hadn't come to that realization before that moment in time. But I had a peace. The Bible speaks about a peace that passes all understanding. And I knew in that moment that whether I lived or died, everything would be okay. And that moment shaped everything that would follow soon thereafter. Because we found out as a community that we could be more than we ever thought we could be, more generous, more compassionate, more kind, more loving, more giving. And we created a community that we refer to as the 912 community. at St. Paul's Chapel. 9/11 happened. It was covered by every media outlet in the world. But the equally important story is the story of 9/12, when we got out of bed as individuals, as a nation, and we responded to those acts of hatred and violence with hearts of compassion and love and courage. Someone asked Mr. Rogers how to talk to the children about 9/11. He said, tell them to keep their eyes on the helpers. Keep their eyes on the helpers, the one who responded with acts of courage and compassion, not the perpetrators of the violence. You know, to put the emphasis on a different syllable is the work we have to do in this world. Am I right? Can I get an amen on that? Yeah? Because that's what makes the difference. Is the glass half empty or is it half full? We have a choice. We can decide. I spent a lot of my time looking at the glass is half empty. Little did I know on 9/11 that I'd be serving over 500,000 meals with the help of a volunteer corps of about 15,000. Little did I know I would be doing last rites on body bags for the next 8.5 months. Little did I know that when the rescue mission was over, that I too would fall prey to its tragic circumstances, finding out that I had my own situation with my lungs, with over 240 days exposure to the site, my own PTSD and depression, my own anger, my own bitterness. Little did I know that I would soon lose my job, I would lose a house in foreclosure, my marriage would fail. Little did I know that a lot of things were in store for me. In that moment, on the corner of Liberty and Church Street, just outside the Burger King, when the second plane hit the South Tower, little did I know in that moment, when I experienced that peace, that my very life would depend upon that moment to remember it later on as I found my own way to a new life. I came kicking and screaming to the work of forgiveness. A friend of mine in Palo Alto called me up and said, well, Lyndon, you got to forgive those guys. And I said, Rod, what are you talking about? Forgive them. Do you know what they did to me? And I called him back later and I said, oh, you're so right. I hate you. I can't not forgive. Okay, I'll make a deal with you, Rod. This day, I'm going to consider the possibility that someday I might be willing to enter the realm of possibility that I could consider forgiveness as a long-term goal for my life. He said, no, it doesn't work that way. You're either in or you're out, man. And he reminded me of the Nelson Mandela quotation that not to forgive is like drinking poison and waiting for your enemies to die from it. Man, did I drink that poison. It tasted so good. It was delicious. And I was justified in drinking it. But it was still killing me. I'm lucky to be standing here today, to be alive, to tell you this story. Because the power of forgiveness through the mercy of God is what saved my life. I found out that I didn't have to focus on the glass being half full, that I could see it as filled and overflowing. Not just half full or half empty, but filled and overflowing. I found out that I could be grateful for the blessings of life, for the breath of life, for the love of people who believed in me and still believe in me, for the work that God had given and is giving to me to share in my testimony and my experience the principles that Fred Luskin talks about in his book, Forgive for Good. Fred's the co-chair of a nonprofit that I started called the Gardens of Forgiveness. And our big, hairy, audacious goal is to create at ground zero a garden of forgiveness where we can sit and reflect on all the horrors that can happen to us as individuals and as a nation and then decide to make the world a better place by opting out of the cycle of violence and revenge. Little did I know I would be brutalized for that, being called out on the Bill O'Reilly show. badge of honor. Can you believe this Harris pansy guy? He wants a garden of forgiveness at Ground Zero. And what's more, he's never even started a garden of forgiveness at Ground Zero. And the image that he shows of me on his show is a photograph from an article in the Christian Science Monitor, their People Making a Difference column, in which they applauded my work in creating gardens of forgiveness. It's a photograph of me sitting in the Garden of Forgiveness minutes from Ground Zero at the Quaker School. They don't care about the truth, do they? Another reason to be bitter. But don't go there. I did a workshop at the Leaf Festival last year called Forgiveness for Activists. I know, I'm going from preaching to meddling here. Stick with me a minute. And I realized in preparing for that workshop, and I said it before myself because I needed to do that work, that I needed to work on that part of forgiveness too, because my biggest forgiveness challenge is not the church at Ground Zero or the Diocese of New York or Osama bin Laden. My biggest forgiveness challenge for me personally was George W. Bush. And I, you know, Mother Teresa once said the angriest place she's ever been is at a peace rally. Ram Dass said it too. I was that guy. 2003, Hans Blix, look over here. I was so angry. But what was I accomplishing? I had to discover the truth of what Gandhi had to say, that we should not only speak peace, but be the peace we wish to see in the world. And in one of the most delicious ironies that God gave to me, the morning before I drove to Black Mountain to give that talk, I had a dream. I don't share this with just anybody, so let's keep this here, if you will. I had a dream that I was wearing a t-shirt that said, "I am George W. Bush." Okay, God, that's just a big bowl of wrong. But I realized that this us and them mentality is what creates the discord. It's what creates the problem. It's not enough to be against something. We have to be for something. That was Mother Teresa's realization. We can't be against war. We have to be for peace. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't critique our political leaders. I'm hoping I can go with you Wednesday, because I think that what Reverend Barber is doing is the most creative and important and inspiring movement we have going on in this country today. And standing with him and standing with you all will give me such joy if I'm able to work it out in my schedule to go with you. It's very important. But getting back to my topic, forgiveness, as you came in, did you see the poster of the man on the wire? All right. Well, this is a visual metaphor for me in my life now, and especially in my teachings on forgiveness. You know, Fred Luskin, my dear friend and the professor at Stanford who wrote the book Forgive for Good, he basically says that forgiveness is making peace with no. You know, we wanted this, and life gave us this, right? And forgiveness is making peace in that gap. There are lots of ways you can fill that gap. You can fill that gap with addictions. You can fill that gap with drama. You can fill that gap with other people who see the glass as half empty, who join in your victim's narrative. Or you can find the courage to make peace with that gap through the power of forgiveness. There are two basic forces, I believe, and I think you would agree with this, in the universe: love and fear. You with me on that? Yeah? Okay. Love and fear. And there are two kinds of fear: the fear of losing something we have, and the fear of not getting something we want. Our brothers and sisters in the 12-step programs teach us this. The reason the man on the wire is so important to me now is, first of all, he's definitely living on the edge. He's walking on the edge. But if you think about what he's doing, he's making peace with what is. He's living in this moment. If you think about the two kinds of fears, the fear of not getting something you want, what is that? That's a historical thing. That's a past thing, right? That's in our past. Can also be known as regret and a sense of loss. But is the man on the wire looking behind him? No. What happens if he looks behind him? He's going to fall. Yeah, his life depends on not looking. Don't trip over something in your past, brothers and sisters. I saw that in one of the Baptist churches here locally, and I like that. Don't trip over something. It takes a real act of agility to trip over something in your past. I've done it. It's not good. If you look too far ahead on that wire, too far out in the future, you're afraid of not getting something you want. That can be equated to anxiety, I think. You know, fears of the future, fears of not getting what I want in that future, fear of not getting the future that I want. If Philippe Petit focuses too far in advance, what happens? He's going to fall. Everyone with a guitar is an aspiring singer-songwriter, right? I've never played here, especially after you've played so beautifully. But I've written a song about this. It's called Man on a Wire. And one of the verses goes like this. You teach us so much about life and love as you climb the heights, as you soar above, not looking behind you or too far ahead, no past to regret, no future to dread. Man on a wire, climbing higher. What do you see? Man on a wire, climbing higher. You look so free. There is freedom in this moment, this breath, this precious, sacred moment that we're sharing here together. I became fascinated with Philippe Petit because my daughter, Margaret, is so enamored with him. We watched the documentary and she's weeping. I went, wow, this is really touching, but I don't get it. Tell me, help me, help me understand. She said, Dad, this man gives everything for his life's passion. And he is the most fully alive person I've ever seen. He lives this moment, this breath, this moment between life and death is precious. Well, we have to come to terms with something in life called tragedy. Why do bad things happen to good people? They happen to all people. Am I right? Yeah? There is no way that you and I will escape the tragic sense of life in some way, shape, or form. It's a part of being human. And the definition of a tragedy is something that can't be fixed. You can't unring a bell. You can't turn back the hands on a clock. You can, but it doesn't really work. How do we make peace with the sense of tragic in life, to make peace with something we have lost? Forgiveness. Sometimes we forgive each other. Sometimes we forgive our families, but also sometimes we have to forgive life. It's just a part of it. We have to forgive life. But even though a tragedy can't be fixed, a tragedy, through the mercy and compassion and kindness of God and God's community, a tragedy can be healed. A tragedy can be overcome through the power of forgiveness. So, what exactly is forgiveness? Forgiveness does not mean that we give up having feelings. Forgiveness does not mean that we let someone off the hook for doing bad things. Forgiveness does not mean that we have to become a doormat for people to walk on. Forgiveness does not mean forgive and forget. That's Hallmark. My biggest challenge in forgiveness teaching is to try to win the battle of the definition of the word forgiveness from Hallmark. Forgive and forget. No, it's not that. It's in spite of how much I will remember the pain of what happened, I choose to forgive because in doing so, I take back my power. I become the hero on my own journey and not a victim in someone else's narrative. In my forgiveness trainings, I do a whole section on identifying our victim's narrative and transforming that into a hero's journey. The details of the story of our lives may be the same in both cases, but the energy is totally different. And the victim's narrative is, look how bad I was treated. Ain't it awful? And the hero's journey is, I had to face these obstacles. Some days were good, some days were not. Here's what I did. A kite rises against the wind, not with it. To move from being a victim to a hero is the movement of forgiveness. Forgiveness is building a bridge between fear and love. I saw a sign, a funny sign as a meme on Facebook one day. Just said simply this, don't feed the fears. Don't feed the chipmunks, don't feed the squirrels, don't feed the fears, don't feed the pigeons, don't feed the fears. But you know, our fears captivate us. We spend a lot of time thinking about what we lost and about what we might not get, and that becomes an ordering principle of our lives. But there's no freedom there. That's not where freedom is. I discovered that scientists in India have found a humane way of capturing monkeys. You take a coconut, you hollow out the little dimple, you secure it to the ground, and you put a piece of cheese or some morsel of really smelly food in there. The monkey comes prancing along, smells the food, gets really excited, sticks his hand down in there, grabs that food, and oh, it's going to be so delicious, but he's trapped. But if he'd let go, he'd be free. So what are you holding on to? Who do you need to forgive? From whom do you need to ask forgiveness? Why carry this baggage? You know, a few years ago, I was on the Atkins diet. I loved that diet. At that time, I was eating a lot of meat, very little now. But if you fall off the wagon one day, you have to eat a pound of bacon the next day to make up for all the carbs, right? That was my kind of diet. Of course, he died of a heart attack, right? God bless him. After I lost that 20 pounds, I went to the grocery store and I picked up 4 or 5 pound bags of sugar just to see how much weight I'd been carrying around unnecessarily. And I thought since then, and I think today, how much baggage do we carry around unnecessarily? What burdens are you carrying? I like to talk a lot about the Giacometti sculpture of the stick figure man in the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. He's this stick figure, but he's got really huge legs that are so heavily weighted to the ground, he can't move. I like to juxtapose that with the image of skate dancers at Central Park on a Sunday afternoon who are twirling and swirling and wearing the most outlandish costumes you can imagine. That's where life is. Release the burdens, because God wants you and me to be light on our feet, to dance our way through life. Hurt people, healed people serve. God longs for you and me to release our fears, to let go of our burdens, to refuse to continue being a victim in someone else's narrative, to become a hero on our own journey. A hero with an open heart. Joanna Macy's got this beautiful quotation, walk courageously towards the future with an open, broken heart. God longs for you and me to embrace the healing that is already there so that our own energy will make a significant contribution in the life of the world, so that when we go to the rallies, we realize that it's not good enough just to be against something, but to be for peace, to be for this, for that, and not against the other. There's a lesson I had to learn. Everything you want, Jack Kornfield said, is on the other side of your fear. This morning, I invite you, and maybe we'll have a dialogue about this at coffee hour. Think about what it is you need to release, if you need to release anything. What it is you might want to embrace. What it would mean for you to become the hero in your journey, intentionally embracing the principles of compassion, kindness, and goodwill that you speak of here in such a powerful, powerful way. Greg Greenway is one of my buddies. Some of you probably know him. He did the song that has become a campaign in the Unitarian Church, standingonthesideoflove.org. Independently of that, I came up with the Standing on the Side of Love Coffee House. I had no idea, actually. But he has another little song that I just love. Every little day, the world is brand new. The sun comes up, the clouds roll through. Everything else is just up to you. Every little day, the world is brand new. We can decide every little day how this day is going to be. And our energy, our participation in that can make a huge difference. Well, I remember when I was a young priest in the Episcopal Church, a woman caught me just before I was getting into the pulpit, and she said, "Oh, Father, just remember, there's no such thing as a bad short sermon." So, so I think I'm going to call it to a close right about there. And I just want to say what a delight it is to be here with you. I look forward to continuing this dialogue at coffee hour. I look forward to talking with you, and hopefully I can go with you on Wednesday. And God bless you all on your journeys. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing a very important part of your journey and inspiring us to re-examine ours.